Now we're joined by Elizabeth Roddick for Ask the Pharmacist. But Elizabeth, I believe you've just been for an eye check.
Oh, hello, Basil.
Hello.
Yes, I've just been for an amazing eye test. My family, unfortunately, has had a really bad eye history. My mother was not picked up for glaucoma, and in fact, she lost her sight completely. And my brother, late brother, in fact, was diagnosed with glaucoma at age 42. He's no longer with us. But for that reason, I'm absolutely fanatical about going for a check.
As you should be.
And it was really interesting today because I went into, and obviously my optometrist, optician, had been revamped. And she produced something called OCT, which is an optical coherence tomography machine. And it was just absolutely fantastic. It was like something out of science fiction. And the reason it was so interesting was that she could, looking at the back of my eye and looking at all round my eye, could in fact detect any of the diseases that I'm sure everybody knows about in terms of going to get checked. For example, age-related macular degeneration. She can actually look at the eye and detect it.
Diabetes, so is this the the photos of the retina at the back, that kind of?
Well, it's
slightly different.
It's much more than that. She did obviously that one.
Yeah.
But this machine really gives you scanning of all the areas in the eye, like the macula. For example, it looks at clearly the back of the eye. It can tell you if you're suffering or even starting glaucoma. And of course, we don't know.
Wow.
There's an absolutely no symptom when you've starting glaucoma until it gets very serious. And I think it's just so exciting. And I wish everybody was able to do this.
Is this a new one in your fancy new optometrist? Or do you think these will be rolled out everywhere?
Well, I believe the machine costs £30,000. So I think possibly...
Maybe not on every...
It might not be everywhere. But I think it's fantastic, actually. I'm just blown away with it. Completely blown away.
Yeah, it's amazing. Any steps in the right direction, obviously, when it comes to eye health, we're going to really care, but it's a really good move. And obviously, people listening know to always go and get your eyes tested. As a diabetic, I completely understand that as well.
Wow.
It's a very important thing to do. So, shall we have a look at what's been going on behind the medical headlines? And there seems to be a lot of flu-type illnesses going around just now. Is it Australian flu or something along those lines?
I was going to say, first of all, it's important to stress that there are lots of nasty viral infections that people are suffering from, which is not really the flu, as you know, and we get protected against that with the vaccines.
Yeah.
And obviously vaccines... somebody was asking me the other day, is there still time to get vaccinated? So I phoned up public health. I mean, I give vaccinations on a private basis in the pharmacy.
Yeah.
But seemingly you can get vaccinated up until the end of February, so it's still worthwhile. And the vaccination currently available, it's got flu strains decided by the World Health Organization. And they decide in the spring, manufacturers produce the vaccines over the summer, so they're ready for administration from September. So you're talking about the strains, and it's H1N1, H3N2. And the one that's really been causing the problem in Australia is H3N2.
And do we know how it's managed to hop its way over here?
Well, I'm not sure if it's... I think just we tend to look at... The World Health Organization looks at what's happening in the Southern Hemisphere, their winter, and they say, well, what are the most prevalent strains?
Right.
And I'm not saying it's a guessing game. It's an educated guessing game. They then produce these, as I say, they tell the manufacturers to produce certain strains. And so, as I say, the three strains mainly in the trivalent are H1N1, and it's the H3N2 that's been causing the problem.
So with the vaccines, how long do they take to work?
It's about 2 weeks, Basil,
Because I've still not had mine. I keep getting texts from my doctor saying you need to come in. Obviously, being a diabetic, I'm high risk.
Yeah, I think you should get one. Yeah.
And is there a new vaccine needed every year? Because obviously I know I'm meant to go back. But will, say, last year still protect me or with the new strains?
No, that's as I was saying, no, they've got to look at the strains every year and they vary every year. And sometimes they don't get it right. I think they've got it right this year, particularly with the quadrivalent one. And that means there's four strains in it. So this year it's different from last year, and probably next year will be different, again. So there's no point in saying, oh yeah, I had the vaccine last year.
And how is, for people listening that may not know, and I don't particularly know, how is flu spread?
Well, I believe it can be up to 6 feet if someone sneezes without catching the sneeze in a hanky. And droplets are spread also even just by talking with someone with flu. And of course, you maybe don't know they have it. It could be early stages. And now you may be immune to that particular virus, whether it's flu or just one of these nasty viruses going about, or you could go on to get symptoms. There are just so many viruses about, and I think that's what's wrong with all these winter pressures. It's not just the flu as such. It's very nasty viruses, both the tummy one, the sort of norovirus, and also a lot of respiratory ones where you're coughing. And I've also found a lot of my patients are finding a lot of tiredness. So they're maybe going to do something like going shopping or maybe going back to work, and then they're off again. They're actually lying down saying, look,
yeah,
I'm too
tired.
Yeah,
feeling a bit lethargic again, yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, a lot of people get mixed up with the flu and a cold. And if it is just a cold virus, what are the treatments around that?
Well, unless you have complications, I mean, please note that there are complications such as shortness of breath, pain, tightness in the chest, obviously blood in mucus. You must go to your doctor, but otherwise you'll find that the doctor is actually sending you to the pharmacist. And I usually suggest bed rest, paracetamol, lots of fluids if it is flu.
Vitamin C.
That's a possibility. And vitamin D through the winter. But if you have a persistent cough, then your pharmacist can give you something to break up the phlegm. Or if I find if someone just can't sleep, then they could try one of the suppressant cough bottles, such as Focodine, or one that has an antihistamine in it. Now, it's best not to suppress a cough all the time, because it's by coughing up catarrh you'll actually
get rid of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, if your head's stuffed up, you could take a decongestant, but make sure you check with your pharmacist, because, for example, if you're on blood pressure medicine, you shouldn't be taking some of these decongestants, because it could actually increase blood pressure.
Ah, so there's all different ways around it. So how do we prevent the spread of viruses?
Well, anyone who's sneezing or coughing, please sneeze and cough into a tissue, dispose of it, and then it's washing your hands, particularly if you're preparing food or you're actually eating food where you're using your hands. That's how it's spread. So just remember that it's washing hands all the time at the moment.
Just make sure you're washing your hands. So change the subject a little bit. And I saw a headline which caught my attention. It was diabetes drug may help with memory loss in dementia.
Yeah, first of all, this was a study on mice. And the researchers were from China and England. And the mice were bred to develop an Alzheimer's-like illness. And the drug used to know was a triple receptor agonist. And it's similar properties to type 2 diabetes drugs. They're called GLP-1 analogues. You maybe have heard of that. The triple receptor agonist, and it's called TA, that was injected into the mice. And then that was checked against a placebo injection, and also mice who didn't have this Alzheimer's-like illness. And it was a daily injection for 2 months. And in order to test the memory, the mice went under a Morris water maze test. You can imagine what that's like. Yeah. And that assesses learning and memory in animals. And the results were that this drug TA reversed memory loss in the Alzheimer's mice. And it was seemingly because it altered the levels of some proteins in the brain. And these help with communication between our nerve cells in the brain. There was also and there was also a reduction in beta amyloid. And I've talked about that before, because people who have Alzheimer's have an increased level of this protein in the brain. Now, one of the problems with these types of drugs is when they're tested in humans, they tend not to work. And also the drug used in the trial is still not available for human use. And I think these headlines, you think, oh, great, something's
great news.
Found.
Yeah.
but unfortunately,
it's not, exactly.
It's too early.
it always happens, though, isn't it? It's like, oh, great news, but it's going to be another 10 years for human tests. I mean, you spoke about there these things that may be there that are causing Alzheimer's. Is there a way of preventing it?
Well, I think just very simple things like eating a healthy diet, moderate exercise, these can actually moderate, well, they can actually greatly reduce your risk. And I think it's just about healthy living. I know it sounds a bit crass, you know, let's just do this. But yeah, we've found from research that if you do eat a healthy diet and you do some moderate exercise, then you do reduce your risk.
Well, I mean, obviously, exercise is always going to help as well. It's onto another headline I saw was that women are 3 times more likely to die after a heart attack than men. That's quite startling, really.
Yeah. This was a collaborative study between English and Swedish university. It was based on Swedish data, looking at the care provided for people who'd had a heart attack. And yeah. It was between January 2003 and December 2013. And it was 180,000 adults. They looked at the survival numbers at 1 and 5 years. And the results were that women tended to be older when they had their heart attack, so that might have something to do with it. Also, they had more illnesses, such as diabetes, high blood pressure, heart failure, and that's also tending to produce stroke. And if you take the chronic heart attack, they found that 83% of women survived after 1 year, 75% after 5 years. But compared with the men, it was higher, 87% the first year and 82% in the 5 years. And interestingly, they also looked at best practice guidelines. And if you undergo best practice guidelines and they are implemented, there was no difference. I think it's really important to point out that this was a Swedish study.
Yeah.
This is not UK. And women and men should be receiving exactly the same treatment. I think that's important to say that, because I think the headline sounds as if, help, if I'm a woman, am I going to die quicker?
And
I think that's important. I mean, I think the worrying headline is, you know, please don't think of it as NHS in the UK, because I think we have equal treatment and we have the best care possible.
That's why we like having you in, Elizabeth, because you sort out these headlines, which may be a bit misleading on the top of the newspaper. Well, thank you very much, and you'll be back in a couple of weeks with Simon Pawley. But it's been really nice talking to you for the first time, Elizabeth.
Thanks very much, Basil.